So we're going to talk about deployments with ARM templates today. Very simply said, we're not going to go into the nitty-gritties on this. I'm not going to go through a full presentation. I'm going to use most of our time today to go through a demo. And that's actually going to be building a template and then deploying servers with it. But we'll go over the real quick high-level description of what these templates are, how they came to be, and how they're going to be used. So real high overview. Deployment templates are relatively new within the last year. They've become indispensable for infrastructure engineers. It gives us a consistent layer to manage all of your infrastructure. And when we're talking all of it, we're talking from load balancers down to storage and everything in between, including security. The great part about this is that it integrates cleanly with your development cycles as well. So a lot of the extensions that Microsoft has partnered with different vendors for, much like Puppet, Chef, and really even third-tier vendors out there that are developing their own extensions and then providing them back to Microsoft and their community cycles. This system is made purely as a templatized version of your infrastructure. So instead of going to the marketplace and clicking on an item, you can create all of this in a code, and then if you'd like to even, produce it back to the marketplace for your consumers or your users to use. There's some notes on these slides too that I'll provide back to you. A lot of these are going to feed back information on the background behind the resource manager model. I'm not going to go too deep into it other than to give you an example of the differences between the ESM, so the service model, and the new resource manager model. And some of this was already covered by Brian and a couple of other people too. But we'll skip forward a little bit here. The classic model was fairly flat. There wasn't a way to put a lot of delineation between your environments within the service model. It was, the VM had an IP associated to it. You couldn't really change the NIC on it, couldn't set up a storage in a complicated way, you couldn't really share these storage units very easily. Likewise, your virtual networks were pretty much right next to each other at all times. There was no way that you have, let's say, the same virtual network subnets sitting right next to each other without putting them in different regions. The new resource manager model gives you that breakout and also gives you the ability to start using referencing within your virtual machines. This is going to be a little bit hard to explain without actually bringing up the code for it, but the basic idea here is each of the different components building up your virtual machine, your networks, and your various network artifacts all reference each other. So instead of building in a virtual NIC within your virtual machine, it's now referencing an object itself that is that virtual NIC. So if you have to switch out your NIC or upgrade it or change it out, you can power down your virtual machine and switch out that piece of virtual hardware with little impact. The other great part is making the actual changes to these pieces are now segmented out. So you're not changing a virtual machine, you're changing the IP address. You're not changing your load balancer, you're just changing the rules within it. It's not a massive change, but it's a huge benefit when you're talking about very flexible architectures. And software-defined computing is the pure definition of flexible architecture. The other great part about this is security. There was pretty good integration with the network security groups in the old service model. You could apply them at almost any level. But now we have even more granularity with the new resource model. And that's not just on network security and the VM, the NICs, what have you, but also on the role-based models. So I can give any user within my Azure Active Directory permissions to modify only certain parts of a virtual machine or even just modify a resource, all virtual machines under a resource group. I should make this an aside real quick. I'm going to talk a lot about virtual machines and IaaS today. Deployment templates can manage PaaS as well. You can actually deploy most of your service apps in Azure through deployment templates as well. I'm not going to cover that as much today, mostly because IaaS is really the easier one to talk about when we're talking about virtual machines and the expansiveness of what you can do here. I'll bring up a couple of quick start templates when we're doing the demo to also talk about what you can see out there that people have already created for deploying PaaS implementations. So Azure templates as a really high level document here. This is more just for your own use. Simplifies your deployments, keeps it consistent, gives you an easy way to roll back. So even within the portal, the rollback methodology, it shows you exactly what it's done and where, and you can change your model right back to where it was. Another great piece about this is that it actually gives you the ability to change your deployments rather than redeploy all the time. So I deploy a virtual machine and an entire architecture with deployment template, and then decide, oops, I needed to add an external IP address on it. It's not going to redeploy all the virtual machines and all the code again. It's just going to make the modifications to those pieces that are changing your template. So rather than having to redeploy everything again, you can really quickly and easily create a change on your machines and not worry about destroying all of the work you've already done within the virtual machine itself. Again, code-based, so I put in the notes here for you. This is all, you can check in this code, you can use GitHub, you can use source repository, so as you're going through change management process within your organization, it gives you the ability to continually keep up on where the changes in the code have been and what change has been pushed to production or dev test, what have you. Okay, common cases. Again, not going to put this in, go too far into this one because a lot of this, realistically, for most organizations, comes into how you can use it internally. And the biggest win is in dev and test environments, because if you need to replicate an environment two or three times, and you need to make sure that it's the exact same thing every time you deploy it, these templates are your way to go. You can take, let's say, a three-server implementation and deploy it, the exact same servers, the exact same NICs, the exact same IP addresses in four or five different places without them interacting with each other. Completely air-gapped. Okay, so we're going to go through a really quick one here for the basics of what they've got and how they're used, or how the... Pardon me as I stumble there. The basics of what a template is and how it's being used. Microsoft and the community at large have provided a ton of templates. These are called the Quick Start templates. Just about every conference, you'll see a slide about this. In fact, I think this is one of Microsoft's slides for the Quick Start templates. They're hosted on GitHub, so there's a tight partnership between Microsoft and GitHub at this point for providing a lot of their open source code in an easily accessible portal. This is the way they've done it. This means that you can go out there and see everything that anybody has presented and created for the community to utilize. About 9 months ago, there was 50, maybe 60 Quick Start templates. I think we surpassed over 100 different templates now as of the beginning of the year. So people are constantly updating these, creating new ones, and creating new scenarios for you to utilize. And I'll actually go through some of those samples here in a little bit. Okay, so JSON files. First, how many people here have used Azure deployment templates? Okay, so not too many people. It's a good thing I'm gonna go through this though. An Azure deployment template is a JSON file. JSON, realistically, is the JavaScript equivalent of an XML file. It's the exact same concept. There's key and value pairs.
Isn't that generated when you do the deployment through the Visual Studio?
Exactly, yes. So that's actually the demo here. I'm going to show you how to use Visual Studio to create these templates in a kind of a systematic format that Microsoft has provided you out of the box, and then show you a little bit more advanced version of how to really, really utilize these in real-world scenarios. So the out-of-the-box Visual Studio can create some of these JSON templates really easily for you. You don't have to type any of these commands in on your own. In fact, most of the time we recommend you don't, because there was a conversation at lunch where, you know, somebody was missing a period or a comma. That can happen really easily in JSON, and there's not a lot of great debugging within the JSON portals right now. So having the ability to right-click and just add a component is key. But to go back to the basics, JSON itself is nothing more than key and value pairs. Now, the way that Microsoft has set this up, and I know it's going to be a little bit hard for everybody to see because it's small, they provide a schema for you. And this allows IntelliSense, as well as your basic editors, to understand what the key value pairs are allowed and gives you the autocorrect functions within your scripts themselves. Basic outline of what's allowed within the current templates are four items, really. I say three usually, but there's a fourth. Parameters, variables, and resources are your primary three. So your parameters are your inputs into the script, so you can always pass values in. Your variables are going to be dynamic or static and sound just like they are, right? They can perform functions, manipulate data at a basic scale because JSON doesn't have a lot of extended functions. There are some very good ones, though. And then allows you to actually create more dynamic content to pass through to your resources. Your resources are the ones that actually get applied to Azure. So this is your virtual machines, your VM NICs, your storage accounts. It creates all of the actual components themselves. So the variables, just as an example, again, not going to be able to see it great here. I'll have a bigger screen when I bring up Visual Studio for you. But some of the common things that you'll see, right? Location, address prefixes, the subnet names, you can put in all your naming conventions into these variables. Resources, broken out and actually created and templatized already by Microsoft. As was mentioned, when you're in Visual Studio, you can actually right-click within an outline format to inject these resources in really easily and quickly so that you don't have to build them from scratch, and you can just modify after the fact. Lastly, I just want to bring out the parameters functions here. So one of the great things in the parameters here is that we can actually put default values as well as allowed values. So when you're asking for content in, so let's say a VM name or VM sizes, right? You don't want to allow your end user that's going to consume this marketplace item to put out a DS3 size virtual machine. Like we said, it's going to be like 60,000 a month. So you're going to limit them just to A2s or A3s. You can actually limit that within this to make it so that they can't modify. It makes it a nice little way to put some controls around presenting virtual machines. Okay, lastly, I actually did this just in case the demo doesn't work, which it looks like we have internet again, so we should be fine. But basic outline, right? So we actually had, I think Brian walked through clicking on the portal and actually showing how you can create virtual machines as well as a couple of other folks. This is literally just screenshots of that same process. So when you clicked on it and you actually entered in the computer name and IP address and the resource group, what you were doing is you're actually passing parameters to one of these JSON template files. All of the marketplace items are deployment templates. You just can't see the template itself at that layer. Okay, so this is where the fourth item comes in on the JSON template, outputs. There's actually a section within the JSON template that you can have it report back something. Consider it sort of like writing a function, right? You always have the ability to report something back. And in this case, JSON gave you the ability to do the same thing. This comes in when we start talking about nested templates, which, again, advanced functions, right? A lot of the basic ones are just one file that runs. You can actually nest these templates. You can have one template kick off another template, kick off another template. I think I've actually seen it go all the way down to 16 subs. I wouldn't recommend that, though. It gets a little complex to manage and trace back where the problem might be. The other piece that it can be used for, though, is that you have a sub-template report back creation of something. So, for example, if you have a virtual machine template that has to create multiple storage accounts, you can have them report back all the different storage accounts if you have them dynamically named. Makes it a little bit easier to manage things in the long run. Okay, the only other last piece that I wanted to cover before we get into the actual demo here is complex objects. I think we had about a half and half developers and not developers in the room, so most of the developers are probably going to recognize this pretty easily. Basically, we're putting arrays of objects into the variables. JSON supports this, so do the deployment templates. It makes it really easy to reference things when you're doing sub-templates, as well as giving you an object-oriented way to reference methods. And all the non-developers just looked at me blankly. Sorry about that. So The only other piece that we're going to cover too here, and I'm going to go through this, this is from the nested template part. Control flow, there's not really a simple, there's a simple logic, I should say, built into the templates to allow Azure to automatically determine when to deploy things, but there's no built-in control flow on when it's going to happen. So you actually have to define that through dependencies, and we'll step through that as well. Okay, so I already mentioned this, but some of the main tools, you can use your normal code editors. These are the most popular. Visual Studio, Notepad++, both have plugins for this. Fairly straightforward. VI, Emacs also, same thing. They work the same way. GitHub is right now kind of the de facto favorite for storing these templates. TFS Online is supposed to have tight integration starting this summer. I'm going to look over at Brian and hope that's coming soon. But we'll find out if that's coming out probably during Ignite this year. They're supposed to announce. So, okay, before I even get into these slides, I included them in the presentation. Does anybody here not know what Git is? Or GitHub? Okay. I will skip these two for now then. If you have questions, just tag me. Okay. Bear with me a second here. There we go. Thought we had this large enough. Does everybody see that okay or no?
Large enough.
That's as big as it gets right now. Okay, so I'll try to describe this a little bit better because I don't think it's going to...
Do you have a center button, not a mouse?
Yeah, it's not letting... It's the biggest it's going.
And you hit control and it won't do it?
That's the biggest...
There it goes.
There it goes. Maybe it's just lag. There we go. Okay. So, very simple deployment template, right? So this is the initial blank template. Typically, you're not going to start with this, but I'm going to start off with it right to, just to start, just to show you kind of the basics of what you can do. Now, this one, I know you can't see the top left corner here. This is a JSON outline. What Visual Studio now allows you to do is actually right-click and go. So there's three extensions that you'll have to add into your Visual Studio in order to use Azure deployment templates. And they really come down to being the Azure SDK, the Azure PowerShell tools, and then the PowerShell Visual Studio extension. The Azure SDK provides all of the JSON outline portions. So I'm going to right-click on this left here. What you can't see is there's four items: parameters, variables, resources, and outputs. So those four pieces that I was talking about in every template, right? So if I right-click on resources and just say add resource, it'll give me the option to add a whole mess of stock resources in. And as I said, these are all various items that you can use from the Azure playbook, right? So, for example, network interfaces, a network deployment, MySQL databases. You can even put in PowerShell DSC components fairly quickly and easily using this interface. I'm going to do a really simple one and just do Windows Virtual Machine for this example. And we'll come into a template that's already set up out there that looks almost exactly the same after the fact. So when I add in the Windows Virtual Machine, it's going to ask me for a few parameters. VM name. Seems I'm having internet issues now. Let's try switching real quick. Hold on a second, guys. There we go. It'll ask if you want to create a storage account as well. So this is all built into it, right? And then a network to go along with it, which I'm just going to call VNet1. When you click Add, and I'll have to make this a little bit smaller just so it fits on the screen now. It's actually created all the basics for us. So it's added parameters in for the storage type, And this is going to match back to the presentation earlier about standard LRS, ZRS, GRS, right? So it gives you the options there. The VM name mandates that it's a MinLink 1. VM admin username, so when you create this, it's automatically going to create that username and password for the first login. The OS version. It's got a fairly limited versions right now. You can actually do more than these. The full list, you can actually do, you can get a full list through PowerShell. But typically, most users are going to use one of these four. And then the variables. So this is going to take some of your parameters, modify them, and automatically convert them, as well as give you the opportunity to start editing it for the environment that you want to create. Now, as a quick shot, just, I need a virtual machine. Typically, you can leave it alone because you're going to put it into your own resource group, so it's not going to affect anything else that's out there. But you can run through the resources themselves then and see the first section is going to create a storage account. And again, takes the variable name in, gives you the type, location based on where the resource group is. I should actually comment on this, and I'm not going to get too deep into it. There's API versions out there. Right now, there's three API versions that you can work against with Azure, I think, well, at a production level. I think there's two previews right now as well. Most of the time, we've been using the 6.15, 2015 versions for most of our deployments. There's actually changes in the way that the structure of the resources are allowed based on the schema and the API version we use. So you can override that per resource. Right now, the defaults are usually best, unless there's something you're really banging your head against. But at that point, call Microsoft or give them a ticket real quick to say, hey, what do I need to do to modify this specific piece? The only time we've really found an issue is actually in the VM NICs themselves, or if we're using another preview CAS product, and that's where we need to use a different API version. Beyond that, it's actually going to create the virtual network itself. So these are all going to pull in the variables again and create the subnet as well. So all those clicks that you saw through all the other presentations right now in the portal, it's all contained within this one document and this one file. Everything that you need to create this one virtual machine, including the virtual machine itself, is right here. So in essence, over the last 5 hours, we've talked about storage, networking, and the virtual machines and the resource groups themselves. This JSON template does that all. And it gives you the ability to re-implement the exact same virtual machine over and over again, the exact same way, without having to remember where to click and which ones you had to type in to get it to build it that way. Okay, so quick demo. And I'm gonna go into the quick start templates to show off what they've done there first. So, two ways to get to quick start templates. Go maximum. The first is on the Azure site itself. This is a fully indexed site, so they actually go through the GitHub repository, index everything that's in there. There's actually some specific formats that if you're going to submit to the GitHub repository, you have to put in a README that this then goes through and indexes and makes it searchable for you. Easiest way to get anything out of this is literally just type in what you're looking for, right? So if I'm looking for a SQL server, if it updates, I'll ignore it for now. You can really easily get it through this, though. For example, HA SharePoint site, actually. Should be able to bring that up. It'll bring you into the details of how they built it, what it actually provides, and then the parameters that are going to be required in order to deploy this template. If you want to get into the real technical details on them, just go to Learn More on GitHub. It'll take you directly to that repository so that you can see what's included in the templates. Now, this one's a really complicated one. So they've got a lot of sub-templates built out, as well as automation built into DSC, so that it can automatically install SharePoint, configure the SQL databases, and realistically, you click a button, and you'll have SharePoint within an hour. So I guess I should back up a little bit there. Greatest thing about deployment templates, right now we've just talked about virtual machines. At the very end of this, you can actually deploy your code or your application and fully configure it from this one template. So you get a code package from any developers, any set of developers, and you can check out that code and deploy it using your these templates. I've got an example of that I'll show you when we get to the advanced ones here. Okay, so I'm going to go into the list of templates in GitHub real quick. And as you can see here, I will make it a little bit bigger. There is a very long list in here. They start out as very simple ones in the 101s, 201s get a little bit more complicated, and then you've got 301s and then the super complex where it's actually environments that people created for you. And a lot of these are great for quick hit, I want to try something out, but trust me when I say you'll probably want to modify it for your own needs if you're going to use any of these. They were usually made for a specific purpose by someone, and then for you to consume them right out of the box, your mileage may vary. So we're going to actually use one of these right now, and it's one of the 101s, and it's going to match almost line for line the simple virtual machine one that I just created on our own in Visual Studio. So very simple deployment of a Windows VM, right? Nothing more than what we just saw on the other side. It actually matches almost word for word. The only thing they added in was some more cleanup on the variables themselves so that when the virtual machine creates, it looks prettier on the VM names. And Chromebooks. Okay, two ways to deploy Azure deployment templates. Well, three ways actually. The two basic ways, command line or through the port. You can actually deploy these templates directly out of a portal. And that's what these two buttons are here. When you build out a template, you can say deploy to Azure, and it'll take you over to your Azure interface and ask you to fill out the parameters just like it was a marketplace item. So a nice, easy way to consume it if you don't want to figure out how to use a command line or PowerShell. Looks like I have to log back in. So same view we saw earlier, right? It's going to show us the custom deployment based on it, and it's going to ask for the parameters that were in the file itself. Now, I'm not going to actually do the deployment here. I'm going to focus on the command lines, mostly because we already saw this once today. Now, on a command line side, there's actually two different command lines that you can use. There's the standard PowerShell Azure plugins that you can utilize. And a lot of people have had great success using them. For the most part now, though, I've actually been recommending people try out the Azure Cross-Platform CLI. And what this is an actual, as it says, cross-platform CLI. So you can utilize this on both Linux boxes, OS boxes, and Windows boxes in the exact same way. So before this runs. Yeah, it's a little small still. Give me a sec here. Let me see if I can get this a little bit more readable. Yeah, it's a lot better. There we go. So this is the Azure CLI. It actually works the same way as your PowerShell plugins will, with a slight twist. PowerShell commands, for the most part, call out directly to the APIs. The Azure CLI uses the SDK for Azure to interface with those APIs. It's basically how they made it so it would work on any platform, right? They needed some sort of middleman so that they didn't have to redevelop it every time, I should say. Now, this is based on node.js, for those of you that know it, right? So it's fairly portable code, really easily extensible, and they've been adding things to it constantly. you can manage actually both your ARM templates or your ARM Azure interface as well as your service manager interface with this. So it does give you one consistent set of commands rather than having to figure out which PowerShell command and command let to utilize. It gives you one place to do it all. Don't want to take too much time on this because this is supposed to be mostly about the templates, but to switch between ASM and ARM, it's nothing more than one command. So Azure config mode ASM switches you over to service manager, ARM will switch you back to resource manager. That being said, this isn't showing up great with coloring, so let me highlight here and maybe that'll make it a little bit easier at least. Not really. The basic command that we're going to use here is Azure group create. So this is no different than doing, I believe it's new RM group deployment, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on that one. I'll have to bring up my notes on it again. I haven't used the PowerShell ones in about 2 months. So in essence, what you're doing is you're creating a deployment though. And it's that when we clicked on the deploy to Azure and it popped up that screen for the parameters, this is doing the same thing. Now, in this case, I actually have the parameters file set up in its own file. Rather than having it ask for each of the pieces in line, you can pass that through in another JSON file. So I'm just going to display it on the screen here. Just like your Azure deployment template, looks the same way. The only difference is you're only passing keys in, you're not passing commands. So when you pass this off to the interface, it's going to read those as parameters right into the command itself for the deployment. So you're not going to have that back and forth of what's the username you want to use and all that. It just goes straight through. So just to show it off real quick. Should mention you should log in first. Since I lost connection, it'll ask me to. Fun part about the Azure CLI is it actually provides a kind of nice little way to authenticate you. Instead of popping up every time, it actually just provides a token that you authenticate once through the website, and it waits for that token response, which happens nearly instantaneously. There we go. So, fun part about Azure Resource Manager. In order to create a deployment, guess what you need? A resource group. So, forgot to create the resource group. We're going to create that right now. And again, so you can do this through the portal. I'm betting somebody's already done this since you're working in a new portal anyway. But just adding it here and defining the location is the exact same as I'm going to do in the command line right now. I'm going to do it by saying just create rg-test or demo. And the location, I like the East US region right now. It's the easiest one, it's got the most features. But Central US and West is pretty much the same nowadays. Okay, there we go. So it does a quick validation on your template. So it actually validates that the JSON is good before it sends it off the Azure CLI or Azure APIs. Once it does that, I'm getting a little spinner here now for the waiting for the complete. If you go into your portal, and select your resource groups, you'll actually have a last deployment here, which will always show the current running one or the last one that ran, or you can click within deployments and get a current status on what it's doing and where it's at. So already, it's created a storage account, the network itself, created a public IP, the virtual machine NIC, as well as started to create the Windows virtual machine. So about 10 minutes here, right, from start to finish of creating a template file, deploying it, and then actually having it build. Within about 5 minutes, the virtual machine itself will be out there, and we'll be able to RDP to it directly. Okay, before I go too much further, because we're running close on time, any questions about the basics of deployment templates before I get into the advanced ones?
What was it you right-clicked on to start this whole process in Visual Studio?
So in Visual Studio, if you create a new solution, let me close this solution first. This is not going to be easy to see on the screen, but I will try to describe it as best as I can, and I can probably get a magnifier on it if I tried. But there's an Azure resource group. Once you install the Azure SDK and the extensions for it, this will show up as a project type that you can utilize. That project type allows you to add in these deployment templates themselves. And some of those notes are actually in the slide deck themselves, which will be available for you. Or how to set this up in the basic process. There's a lot of blogs out there that describe how to configure Visual Studio, as well as how to subscribe to some of the more active developers out there and their constant blogs. There's a lot of great work happening in this area for that. Excellent. Any other questions about the templates themselves? Excellent. Okay, for the last few minutes then, I'm going to have some fun. I'm actually going to show you kind of a real-life example of what we've done with these, which can be fairly complex over time. We've had several customers that need highly available three-tier architectures that can be redeployed several times over. For example, the ability to take a .NET application with two front ends, several application servers, and then a highly available SQL always-on environment, and deploy that 7 or 8 times within a development environment so they can iterate through changes. In order to help them do this, they didn't want their developers to fight with the operations teams on creating these servers, these virtual machines, and constantly finding roadblocks in their way to deploy these services. And in fact, they were at times asking for servers to be created and waiting up to 6 to 8 weeks for the environments to come back because they had to get new networks, new firewalls put into place, just complete air gap around these environments because they didn't want any of the data to come in or out of it without them specifically mandating that that happened. So what we ended up doing is creating, in essence, a set of deployment templates that subbed down to three levels. So what we did is created one deployment template at the top level, and I'm going to use ADFS for example here right now, that implemented a lot of nested objects with the nested deployment templates. So I kind of quickly commented on the nested objects. These are variables and parameters that come in with arrays of variables underneath them. So you can quickly add and subtract parameters and values without having to affect your actual templates. There's a lot of examples out there. I'm going to kind of go quickly through this part of it because I don't want to get lost in the weeds on this too much. But the basic idea is that you can use code much like this one right here, which calls another deployment. So we just did a command line deployment to push out a template. This is an actual template that calls another template. Now, a couple of key pieces to remember, though, when you're doing this. If you're calling a sub-deployment, it has to be available on a website somewhere. Right now, they don't have an ability to call nested deployments from a local machine. So, either GitHub, or in this case, what we did is we stored it in a storage account share, because all storage accounts have accessibility through the web. So store these sub templates within a storage account and then have these call. and then pass the parameters that you need to modify it for the environment. Now, what ends up happening is this sub-deployment then calls all the component ones. So the deploy all here is the actual sub-deployment, which modifies all the variables as much as possible, makes sure that everything's being laid out consistently in a three-tier architecture, and defines all of the variables themselves, but then goes back into some more sub-deployments. And what we did is we actually took, for example, the VM NIC, the storage account, the virtual machine, the load balancers, and the SQL configuration, and broke those all out into their own deployments themselves. So that when you're building a new architecture or a new application, it's almost a drag and drop, right? You copy these two base files in, and then say, yeah, you know what, I need that component, but I don't need that one. And you use the same code over and over. It becomes a copy and paste architecture for creating any new environment. Beyond that, what we ended up doing is, for example, Puppet, configuration management software. How many people are working with Puppet, Chef, CF Engine? Okay, we got a few. This is sort of like DSC, right? It's a way to modify your current configuration and keep configurations consistent across all of your servers. Well, in order to do this at a large scale, we needed to create a Puppet environment. So what we did is we actually created a deployment that deploys Puppet. So kind of chicken and egg scenario here, right? Needed a way to create a consistent environment, so we created a template to create a consistent environment so that we can test out every time we wanted to make a change to it. So every time we wanted to make a new modification to a global scale of all the applications, we could deploy all of them into a new resource group, completely air-gapped from everything else, deploy a brand new configuration management engine with all the current code, and have it up and running within an hour. And we're talking 75 servers with the configuration engine all rolling out within an hour. And one click of a button. So I kind of alluded to this, and I know I'm over, and I'm going to get the look pretty soon here from Michael and Norm, but at the very end of this, and I alluded a little bit, and it's in the presentation as well, at the very end of these pieces, you can actually add an extension. This is a piece that there's a lot of Channel 9 presentations on. There's built-in extensions that Microsoft has provided, a lot of partners have provided, as well as custom script extensions. What these allow you to do is inject additional programs and code into your virtual machines and into your environments on a programmatic basis. So, sounds like a lot of words, but really all I'm saying is, with one little block of code in your JSON template, you can provide a script that'll automatically do something once that virtual machine is brought online the first time, before it's made ready for your end users to log into. In this case, the Puppet server actually calls out a custom bash script. A very simple bash script that goes through and updates the server, sets the SE Linux level, installs Puppet, configures it, puts the initial configuration in, and then checks out the current code base from the Git server to make it so that everything comes down cleanly.
Well, in terms of like the web configs, and you have the dev and release and other.
Yep.
And that doesn't necessarily, I've noticed, dovetail well with the Azure deployments, because of the connection string overrides and things.
It actually can.
Yeah, this was kind of wondering.
Yeah, so we're actually handling that by putting an application environment variable in as part of the parameter.
So that'll go with the correct config then to start with?
Yeah, exactly. So what we ended up doing is for making sure that we have the right web.configs getting deployed to each of the web servers, what you end up doing is we have this artifacts, actually, application and environment, right? So when, as one of the parameters that comes in, we define whether or not it's going to be dev, support, test, or prod. Support was like the central services model. It's basically the ones that are shared across all the different subscriptions. So in this case, we actually have four subscriptions that we're deploying to on top of it, not just resource groups. So we have four subscriptions with up to 20 different resource groups on each of them. Overly complex, but they require it. But what we're doing is we're using that environment variable to take whether or not it goes to dev or test, and then having each of the web configs as part of that deployment. So every time it goes out to the right place, you're always getting the right config and the right overrides as well as the right debug level set. Because the, one of the things that we need in the dev environment is higher debugs, right?
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that's turned off. And not just on IIS, but for Azure monitoring levels as well, right? So in the dev and test and support areas, we don't necessarily want debug level monitoring on our websites on the Azure side. We want it in the IIS side so that you can do code debug. But we don't want to have all of that, the event logs, spewing into our HD Insight
OMS. Yeah, it got really expensive.
Exactly. So that got turned down, whereas the IIS logs gets turned up, and vice versa when you get into production, right? So we get more logs from the system into our event log tracking for production and support, and less on the IIS side because we're not as concerned at that level because code isn't going to be bad by the time it gets there. So, yeah, you can manage all of that, actually. The other piece that I haven't touched on here, and I'm going to wrap up real quickly, is DSC. The DSC extensions flow seamlessly into this model and allow you to modify things like virtual nicknames even, and do the formatting of your disk drives and as in your E and F drives, if you provide those for your virtual machines. And it gives you the ability to make it so that literally you click and you deploy. Sorry, Michael, I'm going to use one more story real quick. One of my favorite conversations, I sat down with an app deployment team, and they were trying to put out a K2 server, right? Nothing really complex, really straightforward stuff. They'd been waiting for 4 weeks for their ops team to come back with a server. Once they got it, IIS wasn't installed, .NET 4 wasn't installed. They were missing all of their extensions that they needed. Took them another 2 weeks to get to the point where they needed something, right? I sat down to do a requirements gathering meeting with them so that we could put them into a deployment template. And while we were putting together the service manager catalog item, I actually built the template. And we deployed it 10 minutes after I sat down into Azure with his code base in there as well. It deployed everything from start to finish. That's the story that we have to bring to our end users and to our line of business owners, right? As developers, we shouldn't be waiting on something, and there's no reason why operations needs to wait on anything. This gives them the ability to consistently roll things out in a manner that allows them to still control every aspect of the infrastructure, but keep it at a very basic code level so that we can still track changes every day. Anyway.
I got a question. So you think I'm trying to hurry you?
No, I was just going to say, any questions? So please.
Hopefully I'm not the only one thinking this. So clearly, I mean, you've got infrastructure as code. There's clearly tons of overlap with like a Chef or Puppet. But you said, you know, you are using them together. So I'm wondering what your view on is. They must offer something different. They're complementary, or what's your view on them?
They're overlap. So Okay. Everybody has overlap. Chef, Puppet, DSC, and even a lot of what we can do just programmatically through the templates themselves has overlap. Some of the pieces that Chef and Puppet can do, this doesn't do right off the bat, right? You can't set a time zone on your servers through DSC easily. You can. Don't get me wrong, because it's PowerShell, and you can change anything with PowerShell. But it's not recommended, right? To keep it consistent, you can set it once through PowerShell. If you have a DSC manager, which is another server, you can do a lot of these management items, right? They're all playing in the same space. Now, if you don't have a configuration management server, you don't have Puppet, you don't have Chef, you don't have DSC, you don't have CF Engine, you don't have any of these ways to do things, this gives you a nice place to start with it, right? And it's not going to keep things consistent if somebody goes in and changes it on their own, but it will give you the ability to have a consistent start and a way to revert things back if you rerun it again. Yes?
So how easy is it to, I'm guessing that it's really powerful so you can deploy hundreds of VMs in an hour, but how do you kind of tear it down?
So this does not do teardowns right out of the box. You can use it to do that. Your best bet is to use the CLI as well as to use your typical artifacts, right? So the resource groups are your teardown method, your easiest one, right? If you wanted to build up and tear down an environment that you're using to test something for an hour, for example, the server that we just built should be deployed by now. Is deployed and ready to go. If I wanted to get rid of this, I can just run a PowerShell command to say Azure group delete, And what it's going to do, it's actually going to go ahead and delete everything out of that environment. And that's literally everything, from storage, virtual machines, NICs, IP addresses. It wipes the whole thing. Now, word of warning. You do this, there isn't a recovery, right? Microsoft's really good at making sure that you say yes three times before you do a deletion like this. I just hit -Q on it, so it didn't ask me, right? So be careful with it, right? Recovering this kind of stuff. Technically, you are supposed to be able to recover some of it if you open up a support ticket, if you did a mass deletion like this on accident. But I haven't been through the process, and honestly, I don't think I'd ever want to. So, again, be careful on that one.
That's both the CLI and PowerShell. There you were using the CLI, right?
That's both. Yeah, they both do the – it's actually calling the same calls, right? So it's just two paths to the same goal. I find the Azure CLI the easiest way to get into using the PowerLine commands, especially for those folks that aren't necessarily Windows backgrounds and have more of a Linux background or a Mac OS background. It gives them a path in without having to get used to PowerShell as well. Any other questions? Excellent. Well, in that case, thank you very much, everyone.